Second. Second, Lima. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed say nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. You received the meeting notes of our November meeting. I received no changes or corrections.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Leland. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Of course, handling that business that way is just a ruse to get you starting to say yes, right? Isn't that the technique? Getting the yes. So we have a couple of updates. The first one on advisory council issues. The first one has to do with the new Salinity Advisory Committee. As you know, the new railroad causeway breach includes an adaptive management tool that will allow the state to try to manage salinity balance. They've gone through a process, selected Jeff Denblaker as a contractor to help them organize the Salinity Advisory Committee, and I understand their first meeting is tomorrow, so we've invited Jeff to tell us where we're at and where we're going.
Great.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. As you know, salinity of the lake is arguably one of the most unique things of Great Salt Lake, as a reason why we're all here. It has been a concern and something that has been discussed for a very long time. But as Don mentioned, with the new breach or the new bridge that was built recently in the New Pacific Railroad Causeway, it has come right to the forefront. Go ahead. And so just a brief background. When Union Pacific put the new bridge in the causeway, there was a mitigation plan that was incorporated as part of that project. It incorporated the new bridge as mitigation for closing the two culverts in the causeway. But along with the new bridge was they incorporated a control berm. And that's kind of a unique way to passively control the flow from the north arm to the south arm and vice versa. The plan includes monthly, quarterly, and annual monitoring that Union Pacific needs to do over the next 5 years. We're effectively 1 year into that. Union Pacific needs to make quarterly reports on what they're finding, what they're seeing, as well as an annual report summarizing each of the four quarters of the year. And then as part of that reporting, they also incorporated an adaptive management plan. And there's a lot of details here I won't get into here, but fundamentally the key question really comes down to if changes are observed in the salinity of the lake, are they due to the bridge? There's a lot of factors in the salinity of the lake, but one of the obviously key concern for Union Pacific are the improvements that they built creating a change if one is observed? And then if so, how should the geometry of the control berm and or the bridge, there's some latitude there as well to change the width of it as well, should those be changed? And obviously that's a very complicated question. There's a lot of science that goes into that. But Union Pacific would evaluate that and then provide their recommendations to the Corps of Engineers, Division of Water Quality, and Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. As part of the structure, and I'll show you here in just the next slide, they wanted to make sure that they got some guidance and recommendations from a Salinity Advisory Committee. Because not only are Division of Water Quality and Forestry, Fire, and State Lands interested in what the salinity changes are due to this new bridge, but they're also concerned about the long-term management of salinity of the lake. And so they thought that it would be best to form a Salinity Advisory Committee that could help advise them on these matters. And so in terms of, so we can kind of look to the Union Pacific Causeway breach as kind of the impetus or what precipitated the formation of the Salinity Advisory Committee, or SAC, SAC. And there's a lot of different agreements that are wrapped around that breach. And you can just see them here. I mean, between DWQ, Union Pacific, and the Corps of Engineers, the 404 permits, the 401 water quality certification. There's an MOU that talks about how things are going to be managed into the future. But then between Forestry, Fire, and State Lands and Union Pacific, there's a special use lease agreement for for them to have the bridge, the causeway on the lake bed between Forestry, Fire and St. Lands and DWQ and MOU to, you know, to spell out here's how they're going to be coordinating and cooperating into the future as well. So all of that revolves around the causeway breach. But then in terms of the Salinity Advisory Committee, it kind of builds on that same relationship that you have there. DWQ, and you see on the upper right hand corner is where this body is, the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council, and providing advice and coordination between all the different stakeholders and agencies involved with the lake. You can see there the tech team, when that was formed, and actually when the advisory council was formed, it was stated that the tech team would really be kind of a science advisory committee for the advisory council. And so you see that linkage there. Obviously, Forestry, Fire and St. Lands and DWQ are the two key agencies that are helping this advisory council, facilitating the meetings, doing the coordination, communications, and whatnot for the council. But then we see here the Salinity Advisory Council or committee, and the way it's been envisioned is that it will become, or it is a subcommittee of the tech team, but as Forestry works with the tech team to kind of formalize more how they, you know, a charter for that group, the Salinity Advisory Committee will be, in the short term, be working directly with Forestry and water quality. Yes.
Where does the tag team fit in?
Next. So, and then obviously but that doesn't, and their tag team is part of the Division of Wildlife Resources. That's kind of their science advisory group that advises them on their Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program. And then there's been a number of other science panels, steering committees that have been formed over the years looking at different issues. And so all of those things are, you know, I think the advisory council, there's a lot of these issues come to the council here, but what we wanted to do is say, okay, well, where does the Salinity Advisory Committee fit in? And so there's a lot of overlap in the membership between these people at the agencies and the tech team, the Salinity Advisory Committee and the TAG for wildlife resources. But each one has a different function, different objectives, goals that they're trying to achieve. And so if we move to the next slide, the objectives for the Salinity Advisory Committee, and this is spelled out in the MOU between Water Quality and Forestry and Fire and State Lands, is one, is they really wanted to look at the long-term management of water and salt transfer through the causeway. Yes, they have to provide input on Union Pacific's permit and the requirements that are there, but they want to really start to take a long-term view of salinity management in Great Salt Lake. And the second item really pertains to the Union Pacific. Yes, and I mentioned is Union Pacific is going to be collecting data from both the South Arm and the North Arm and reporting that to the state. The advisory committee will be looking at that data, interpreting it, providing input to the state agencies. And then lastly, Union Pacific, and this again gets more towards the long-term view of salinity management, Union Pacific, if their bridge does create changes that are outside the performance standards for the bridge, Union Pacific is responsible for making adjustments after getting approval from all the different agencies. But the state does have the ability to be able to modify that control berm as well, the bridge geometry, if there is a need to do so. And so what the state would like to get as far from the advisory committee is input on, you know, when we look at, as we try to understand the salinity of the lake, the dynamics of it, are there things that we could do that might improve the uses of the lake that would not create any detrimental impacts to the water quality or the services of the lake?
Sorry, I moved you.
Yep, that's all right. Yep. And so who's on the committee? We talked a lot about how this committee could be structured. And really what we wanted to do is there's a lot of gaps, a lot of questions on the science end. And so we thought that the committee really should be focused on science and not necessarily the policy. We have other groups that help provide input on policy and interests, but where we have the big gap is on the science. And so what you see here is a list of scientists who are actively involved on the lake, who bring unique knowledge and specialties, expertise to the committee. Andrew Rupke is with Utah Geological Survey, Corey Angeroth with USGS, and Bill Johnson, U of U. The three of them have done a lot of the monitoring, or been directly involved with a lot of the monitoring of salinity in the lake over the years, trying to understand the dynamics of it. Joe Havasey and Tom Tripp obviously are key in the mineral extraction industries. They bring unique expertise and history of how the lake has changed. The next three bring representation from the TAG, the ecosystem program. John Luft obviously is the head of that program, but brings a lot of knowledge of the bird uses. Thomas Bastiles from the Brine Shrimp Cooperative, and Bonnie Baxter looking at the microbiology of the lake. And then Craig Miller, of course, the hydrology is an essential part of the salinity as well, and salt water salt balance of the lake, and Craig brings a lot of knowledge there. Forestry, Fire and State Lands, and DWQ will be overseeing, will be part of the committee. We talked a lot about, well, how, you know, in terms of voting for recommendations and whatnot, both of these agencies will be making recommendations or making decisions, regulatory decisions based on the recommendations, but they also bring a lot of expertise to the table as well. So we thought it's important that they're part of the committee, but given the fact that they're asking for recommendations from these experts, we thought, well, let's, you know, rather than diluting is the right word, but rather than diluting the vote, that they won't be voting as part of that committee. They'll be obviously providing input and asking questions, as part of the process, but won't be making voting for the recommendations to themselves. Next. So what's the plan forward? As Don said, we've got a kickoff meeting tomorrow morning at the DNR building from 9 to 12. We're anticipating having quarterly meetings going forward, but really what we're focused on here, and we've developed a draft charter for the committee for them to really provide input and really revise to meet what they think is needed. But what we're looking to try to achieve is a solid partnership amongst the scientists and the experts. We really want to develop the science, so we've got a solid foundation to make decisions on in the future. And then develop a means, once we have a good grasp of the science and a good path forward there, is develop the means to evaluate how the, what is the effect of the salinity on all the different uses in the lake, and how might we be able to make better decisions in managing that salinity. So how can the advisory council help? Obviously, there's a lot of interests here, a lot of expertise here. What we're hoping is that as the committee goes forward, that the council can provide input, guidance, review of materials that the committee comes with up with, but I think most importantly, support. Forestry, Fire and State Lands, they don't have a lot of resources, and so moving forward, it's going to be a continuous process, I think, of trying to identify funds and staff resources to be able to continue the momentum forward. And so I think in terms of funding, in terms of staff support, and just general political support for an endeavor like this are going to be needed for this to be successful in the long term. So I guess with that, any questions?
Jeff, yeah. Just back on the slide that had three activities that the SAC's gonna, there we go. Mm-hmm. So is the SAC basically interprets data, generates data, and makes recommendations on configuring or not the causeway. Who do those recommendations actually go to technically?
They would go to the DWQ and Forestry, Fire and State Lands.
And then
the Corps of Engineers.
Commissioners.
That changes in the...
Yeah, Marcel?
And I might have missed it, but just to what extent will this group also look at other factors affecting salinity in addition to the berm?
Well, that's...
That's definitely
part of it.
Because it didn't come up in NAERS.
Right. Now, these were the objectives that were in the MOU. What we've talked about, and I guess this is going to be a subject of discussion with the advisory committee, is that, you know, a key thing that we need to do is have a solid grasp of the science. And, you know, how are we measuring salinity? How are we tracking that? How does that change in any given year? There's a lot of different methods being used. You know, how do we compare all these different data sets? A lot of fundamental questions that we need to get our arms around. And so this first year, I think, at least what we've talked about, is it's really trying to focus on what are the big questions, trying to organize those, prioritize those, so that perhaps as part of forestry's hot topic grants program, that they can focus some of those funds to hit the top questions that need to be addressed.
Thank you. So it all depends on the weather. Whether or not we have water. Now that we've only had one good year in a row, still, with the upcoming doom thing with the Bear River water taking, are they gonna look at that?
Yeah, I would assume that's gonna be a big part of the discussion. I know the state's been working on finishing this Great Salt Lake integrated model. That'll be helpful for integrating all this information to look at the salinity of the lake. That's a tool, the USGS water salt balance. And there's a couple tools that they have. And really what we're going to be trying to understand are what are the most important drivers or factors in this, create the salinity that we observe out there. And then, you know, how does that salinity influence all the different uses of the lake?
I think the lack of water is probably up there.
Yep, I think that's
just
fair.
Just want to make sure.
Other questions?
Jeff, can you remind me what in terms of management, that assumes we have a target for the different, the north and the south arm. We don't have parameters under DEQ in terms of what the salinity should be, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as part of this, is there a goal of identifying that and then a timeline and a schedule? Because I think that then feeds into beneficial use designations, and then you can have a management plan that you work towards. Is there a kind of a specific data and timeline to get there? Because as I look at other water bodies, for instance, Utah Lake has a management plan that water rights is guided under, among other things, to support the June sucker and other issues. And I think that's a model potentially here for us. I think maybe that's where others might be looking. That's driven by, the management plan was driven by water rights, mm-hmm. but yeah, it was the interaction of that project requiring sustained Bonneville, June sucker, thank you. Yeah, June sucker recovery program. Mm-hmm. Is there a short version of where we see ourselves timeline and things that will come out of this study?
I think it's fair to say everybody wants something as soon as possible. I think it's going to be more a function of the resources that are available to get there, and because I think there's some fundamental science questions that need to be addressed, and I think that can be done in parallel to development of some of these decision support tools. Asking those questions of what are the ideal salinities for all the different uses. Those are all, I think, is what I have in my mind, is those are parallel tracks that we can be working toward as long as those are being coordinated well. But I know a key concern that forestry has is, you know, their only funding source for any additional science right now are the hot topic grants. And, you know, should they funnel, you know, focus all of that money purely on salinity questions, or should they continue trying to, you know, look at all these different questions? I mean, there's a lot of questions right now being posed about the Great Salt Lake. And this is one that's front and center and is important. It's kind of a fundamental issue that concerns that feeds into all the other resources and of the lake.
But
Because I understand that the only control tool you're looking at is the causeway. So we're not trying to say beyond causeway management, what else can be done? Or are you trying to expand the zone of what you're trying to address?
I think...
I think it remains to be seen, right?
I think the control berm is the tool we have.
The intent was, so they were putting in this bridge, and we took the best model that we had at the time and tried to figure out what would happen. And so as part of their comprehensive management and monitoring plan, per the 404 Army Corps of Engineer permit, 401 water quality certification, the special use lease agreement, they have to meet these targets for 5 consecutive years. Now, what happens after the 5 years? That was the intent of the Salinity Advisory Committee. Although there's so much more that this committee could do, but that is the goal of that committee. To incorporate the IWRM, to incorporate these committees, all these other different entities into a Salinity plan, that'll be a much longer horizon because that is much more difficult. We don't have an endangered species to a threatened species like the Junesucker and Utah Lake to guide that, but wouldn't that be nice? I mean, wouldn't that be, I mean, not that there be endangered species, but wouldn't it be nice if there was a catalyst beyond this berm?
I throw out the water rights is another one, and that is, as mentioned, water, not water falling into the lake is an issue, and that's driven by water rights, which is a sister agency that I think will be helpful out of this process, understanding salinity as it relates to water quantity, that's dilution or the concentration, guiding decisions as I think within the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a whole other cast of water right determinations, including adjudications that are underway. That would be very, there may be an opportunity missed, and that's why I'm asking for a timeline. I think it's important for the state agencies, this body, and as we interact with our legislative entities that influence your budget and otherwise. So here's some timelines, and if we achieve the timeline, here's how it's going to help us as a state. If we miss this timeline, here's how it's going to hurt us. I understand as soon as, but it, you know, as soon as means, you know.
Well, I haven't met yet, so it's
But I guess what I'm asking for, it will be helpful for me, both with this body and with the legislative interactions I have, to give some timelines and some specifics on what we're trying to get out of this. The comment I get back is, you know, if we make the problem so big that no one wants to tackle it and the legislature pushes us aside. So.
Last comment, Leila.
Well, you know, you've got your 3 objectives. You're dealing with the berm. There's nobody from water rights on your Selenium Advisory Committee. So, I mean, while it would be nice to expand it all, I'm not so sure you have the tools in place to do that, to make it a broad spectrum issue.
We don't today. Water resources.
So, we're a little behind here, so let's...
Go ahead, I'm done.
I just wanted to let you finish. Right. Well, thanks. We'll stay in close touch here and invite Jeff for his group back to the report in the future. Thank you. Next on the agenda, very briefly, Laura, is there any...
That's all I have is very brief presentation.
We're going to keep it on the agenda until it's actually launched. So.
I appreciate that. So back in the fall, Jeff and his group got Craig and his group at Water Resources kind of a draft final IWRM, and they took the deepest dive into it as they had to date, and had a couple questions, a couple issues with regard to snowpack and flow through the causeway, right, Craig? And anyway, so Water Resources made these comments to Jeff and his group, and they went back and did some updates and some fixes, and as I understand it, the model should be handed off to Water Resources, hopefully sometime this week, maybe next.
Any day.
What's that?
Any day.
Any day. And then what happens after that, I think, is fundamentally up to us, and we need the water resources and Forestry Fire and State Lands needs to get familiar with the model, understand what it does do, what it doesn't do, feel comfortable with it in its current state, see if we want to add anything to it before we take it out. And I know this group talked, maybe it was like 6 months ago, Leland, when we were out at your place, about kind of a phase two and rolling it out to the public and getting some support from members of the advisory council, some financial support, some political support, moving the model forward for the public as a tool. But we need a little more time before we move on to that phase so we can feel comfortable with the model as a division, or as a department, I guess, so.
Thank you. Brief questions, Anne, you're...
Sorry, I'm just saying, so anything that comes from the model now would be coming from water resources then, right?
Thank you. Other questions?
Just to get a recommendation, I think that we need to get that model rolled out, but I think that because it was funded through the legislature, I think it would be really important to try and, once the model is well understood and utilizable, to go back and tell the Natural Resource Agriculture and Environment Committee what that model says. You know, I'm sure we can help set that up at the appropriate time, but you know, doing that sooner than later is probably viable because it does address water, which Dan doesn't let anybody forget about.
Here, here.
Thank you. Okay, great, thank you. We'll continue to keep our eye on it and tell launches and thereafter.
Okay.
So 1 year ago, almost to the day, actually a few days off, we invited the developers of the Promontory Landfill to our meeting, and they graciously participated and made a presentation about their project. Appreciated them being here and appreciating them being here today. Thank you. In our last meeting, we had a lot of discussion and interest from members of the council as well as from others in attendance on this issue, and determined to invite Alan Moore, manager of the solid waste program, to give us an update on the status of this landfill and application. We also, last meeting, agreed that we wanted to submit a letter identifying questions, concerns, not so much an advocacy letter, taking positions, but raising questions that we feel need to be answered. A draft letter was circulated among the advisory council members. Several of you responded already, and I have a couple of comments. Later in the meeting, we'll come back to that letter and talk about formally approving it. So in the meantime, Alan, the floor is yours if you'd educate us a little
bit.
Sure,
thank you.
Thank you for being here.
You bet. Yeah, again, I'm Alan Moore. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality, the Solid Waste Program Manager. Just wanted to start out. I've got a few presentations. You know, I'm sure you all know where the... I wasn't talking about the Great Salt Lake. I'm sure everybody knows where Promontory Point's at. I've got a couple little just Google Maps showing specifically, and then the, let's see if it's the mouse work. There we go. If I'm not moving it. There's the Promontory Point landfill, or Promontory Point LLC landfill right there. I just wanted to give some historical perspective to what, where we've come from, how we've got to where we're at right now. In March of 2004, there was a permit approved for a Class 1 landfill. A Class 1 landfill is one that is permitted to accept municipal solid waste, industrial solid waste, within certain political boundaries. There's some limitations on what they can do. This permit, again, was approved in 2004. From 2004 until about 2015, there were some ownership changes between the original permittees. It was changed over to Shoshone Promontory LLC, and then it went back to the Promontory LLC. In 2015, some interest was expressed from Promontory Resources, parent group called Strata Renewable Resources, They came in with some interest in taking the landfill, finally developing it. They also looked at changing the status of the landfill from a class one to a class five, which makes it a commercial landfill. Basically being able to accept the same types of waste, municipal solid waste, industrial salt, non-hazardous industrial waste, but with the caveat that that now became, rather than within the political boundaries, within the limitations of a political boundary, it then became a commercial landfill where they could accept waste from anywhere as long as it met the definition of a solid waste. In the 2016 legislative session, there's a couple differences between the class one landfill and a class five landfill in the requirements that they need to meet. One of those is that they need to get legislative approval, and then the final step is gubernatorial approval. In 2016 legislature, under the House Joint Resolution number 20, Representative Perry ran a joint resolution for both the Senate and the House approving the permitting and even future construction of the operation of the of a class five landfill at Promontory Point. Later that year, they had a, and again, I'm going to go back to, it's just a class one permit right now. Later that year, they came in and made a major permit modification to the class one landfill, changing the design status of the landfill itself. So the that was carried through with a major permit modification, and that was approved in March of 2017. They also, there was a public comment period held on that landfill design. We received some comments on that. And then in, like I say, in March of 2017, the class one major modification for landfill design was approved. March of 2017 also, they submitted a permit application for a class five landfill. Our position was that this would be a separate permit and a separate facility requiring different review and different approval. In addition to the governor and legislative and governor approval, they are also required to submit with that class five application a needs assessment review, which demonstrates that there is a need for a class five landfill within the state of Utah to serve industry. And there's a couple other conditions that they need to provide. That needs assessment was submitted in March of 2017. We did not feel we had the expertise in-house, so we sent that out for a private contractor to review, SCNA out of Virginia. They reviewed the that needs assessment, and in August of 2017, the deficiencies were then acknowledged or sent to Promontory Point Resources for their review and response. On December 22nd, just this last year, a couple weeks ago, we did receive their response, the needs assessment review. That response is also sent out to for a contract review to the same company being that has been sent out for their review. One of the things that, those are the differences, the needs assessment, as required by the Solid and Hazardous Waste Act, the legislative and gubernatorial approval. Other than that, the review, the requirements are pretty much the same for a class one permit as well as is a class five. We have received several comments that have come in through, we've received from Natural Resources, through the Governor's Office of Planning Policy. I know it's PLPCO, so. I'm going to have to ask Laura, Public Lands Policy Coordinating Committee.
Lands,
yeah. I'm definitely government and know everything by acronym, so they have to forgive me. We've also received some comments from Compass Minerals. those comments are being reviewed. We're looking at those specifically as far as the there's our review of the permit application to ensure that everything is covered required under the location standards. Once the permit is, once a decision is made on the permit, whether to issue it or deny it, there will be a public notice. Any issuance of the permit will also require a public comment period. This one will most likely be a, the minimum time period is a 30 days. We will most likely extend that to 45 or 60 days due to the level of interest that's been expressed, as well as having a public hearing. We're not at that point yet. We still need to continue or complete our review, and then once, if a decision is made to go forward on the permit, there'll be a draft issued. Some of the other things, they've been working on construction. This is just a view from the looking south from the landfill. They do, again, remind you, they do have a class one permit, so they did proceed with construction of a class of a landfill following the provisions of a class one permit. There's some construction photos that were taken over the last few months. The construction of the landfill. And you see, this is back in October. It is a lined landfill. There's a, they've got a subsurface clay liner and then a flexible membrane liner, which also has a protective covering leachate collection. Most of these photos are taken either looking south or looking from the looking to the southeast. You see the liners. I have a staff member that's been up there several times. He's tried to visit at least, you know, once a week, once every other week, I think, has been the time frame that he's been up. I think we're getting near the end of the photos here. Everybody likes to look at pictures, I hope, right?
Nothing like a track hole.
Yeah. As I mentioned, this is a class one permit. They have authorization to move forward with the class one permit. There are three provisions that they still need to meet to be able to dispose of any waste in the landfill. One is a groundwater monitoring wells and sampling protocol needs to be approved. They have submitted to us a modification for groundwater monitoring wells, their location, and those had to be moved due to the construction of the new landfills. That provision of the permit they have submitted, we are preparing, have prepared approval, and public comment will start on the new location of the monitoring wells. The other two provisions are financial assurance, which is required for all landfills. The mechanism has been approved. We're still looking at the final demonstration that the financial assurance has been funded. And then the last provision for a class one landfill, they need to demonstrate that they have a contract with a local public, a publicly owned municipality, city, special service district in order to meet the conditions of the class one permit. As far as the class five goes, we are continuing our review. This needs assessment is going out for review by our contractor. Our anticipation of that, his expectation is about 2 to 3 weeks, and then we will look at it and compare our notes with his. And another than that, once that review is done, and in our review of the permit, we will be making a decision on denial or approval and moving forward. That's pretty much where we're at right now.
Thank you, Alan. Let's start with any questions from the council members. Leland and then Dan.
You know, obviously your pictures do a very good job of showing the proximity of this landfill to the lake. And going to a class five undoubtedly would increase by significant margins the volume of materials that would probably arrive at this landfill. And so, and given the sensitivity of the lake and the particularly the bird population and everything else, how do you quantify in that application process, that impact, particularly for blown garbage, that the impact will be on the lake. I mean, it's obviously, I mean, I've never been to a landfill where I didn't see plastic bags strewn around everywhere because of blowing conditions. So how do you prevent it from getting into the lake, and how do you quantify that increased volume as to the impact it would have on the lake?
As far as quantification of the volume is difficult to say. The controls will be placed on making insurances that any trash or blown litter, waste, dust will be controlled at the landfill, and that'll have to be engineered within their operations plan.
Yeah, I just don't have a lot of confidence that in and of itself is going to prevent the windblown garbage from reaching the lake because of the proximity. I mean, you know, I mean, my personal experience is, you know, drive to a landfill and you get within a few miles of it, there's windblown garbage all over the place. And I don't know how you're going to prevent that from not getting into the lake. Even if you put in the standardized controls, because of proximity, I don't see how that can be adequate.
And they're going to have to do something to control it and to go out and collect whatever litter.
They could easily put a big dome over it and that would control it, but I doubt they're going to want to do that. And a 6-foot fence isn't going to be a significant barrier. So, in my opinion, that's something that really needs to be factored into this assessment, particularly if you're going to upgrade it from a class 1 to a class 5, in order to ensure that the lake is not detrimentally harmed by this effort.
Dan, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the elevation and how many acres?
The elevation, right now, the acreage out there, I know the landfill that they've constructed is 11 acres. I think their total, I'm not sure the total property that they own. The elevation is about, what is the elevation? I don't know off the top of my head, Adam. It's about 42.
It is about 42. We are about 300 feet in elevation above the level of the Great Salt Lake.
So yeah, I'd say it's about 40, you know, pretty close to what we're here on.
That'd give you 4,500.
Yeah, it's a 2,000 acre property, and we're permitted for 1,000.
Well, if you look at your slides, you can see the water's edge right out there, and that's at 4,190, whatever it is at now, 95?
4,193.
Okay, so 4,193, and you're not 300 feet above that water.
We're about 4,300, so.
Okay. Well, 4,300 is not 300 feet above 4,195. Because I feel like an engineer, I'm doing math in my head and I'm not seeing that.
Sorry, I'm just a geologist. I don't do math that well in my head.
But again, the proximity is right there to the lake, and so I.
Okay, Dan, you have the floor.
One more.
Yeah.
Back to 83, 4, and 5. How close would that lake been to this?
I'm not sure, but maybe get back to the original picture. You can see some of the marshlands out just past the articulated dump. So there you go. You're probably looking at the high water mark somewhere along in there with the marsh.
Well, doesn't that cover it?
The landfill, the cover of the landfill, you mean?
Yeah.
No, the landfill is up above. The landfill, we're standing at the, this photo was taken probably at the southern end or southern boundary of the landfill.
Okay, because it looks like your landfill's way down there.
Yeah. They're working, this is an access road. And I, you know, not knowing where we're standing here, we're looking south, but as far as the boundary of the landfill, see if it, these are hard to tell where the marsh comes in.
Thank you.
But, thanks, Dan. Any other questions, Tom?
Am I kind of following on Leland's comment? As an engineer, I've worked on the landfill design and construction, and seeing what's here, that takes care of groundwater and got monitoring there, but airborne next to a water body that once it hits the water, it could end up anywhere. What specific provisions are there for monitoring and performance requirements imposed upon the contractor for that cleanup? And having worked on the private side, there's, you know, at some point there's a, I hate to see a permit written that becomes cheaper for them to just pay some sort of fine and let things pollute. You know, this could be a big issue down the road. So I'm curious how, if that's already been defined, and there's some certain SART boards that will assure that the airborne debris gets tracked, collected, and pulled in, and penalties to assure that there's incentive for the contractor to make it good.
There's been nothing defined specifically other than the fact they do need to mitigate, control and mitigate any dust going on the property that needs to be controlled. But as far as drafting the permit language and conditions necessary for that, that has not been done yet.
So I would encourage, and maybe this is already in the framework of the dialogue, that having operated in this arena, that the permit require specific monitoring, specific reporting, that the agency have the ability and funding through the permit to be out there assuring that those requirements are met, that there's a performance requirement that the lake is kept clean and they clean that up. You know, that can all be priced in, but it's not structured properly. It's very, it can be full of holes, if you will, and really have a, it can be a problem down the road. Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Any other, yeah, Chris, we'll get out to you.
Let's see, financial assurance is, I'm sure there are several options, and bonding, and I don't know what the other agreements could be. Are they, kind of worst case scenario is there is a problem with waste and possibly hazardous waste or near hazardous waste in larger quantities, that all of a sudden it becomes a problem if it's released to the lake. And so can you just tell me a little bit about what the backup plan is if something like that happens, the company is maybe not doing well or maybe even not in existence. What's to keep the Utah public from ending up paying for big cleanup of the site?
Financial assurance on any facility has to look at the worst case scenario, enabling us as a state or an agency to hire an individual private contractor to go in and do the cleanup. So that has to be funded to allow us to do that with our director being the, I'm thinking trustees, well, it's got in my head, there's another definition for it, I believe, but where he has access to those full funds.
And those funds are exist throughout the life of the landfill?
Yes, they have to be there. There's several different mechanisms that it range from a corporate test to bonding through the publicly, it's another acronym, PTIF, publicly, public treasurer's insurance fund. That's run by the state treasurer's office, but they have to look at the worst case scenario. We have a gentleman in our office that looks at the same engineering controls to make sure that they are properly funded.
Thank you. Other questions from members of the advisory council?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, well, and then I got a couple others, Ann and then Tom, and then we'll assess our time.
Yeah. Two quick observations. I worked at U.S. Magnesium on Palm Trip. Mm-hmm. We have the Wasatch Regional Landfill about 5 miles down the road from us.
Right.
I think that landfill does a pretty good job of taking care of the blowing garbage out of the landfill itself. The bigger problem is blowing out of vehicles that are delivering garbage there. So if you look south of our landfill there, for 4 or 5 miles to the south before it gets to your landfill, is where most of the garbage is. Mm-hmm. Observation number two, I think there have been unexpected ecological effects from the landfill. For example, we used to have quite a few nesting avocets and snowy plovers and things like that. There's such a load of seagulls at the landfill that they just scour the area, and the previous rookery areas are all just wiped out by the gulls.
And you have to watch out for the coyotes running back and forth across the pavement as they're running back and forth in the landfill. And I'm not sure any of those are huge problems, but it's certainly a very macro problem that we can observe during our time there.
Ann, and then Lynn?
Alan, when you send your review out for the needs assessment in any other type, do you have an environmental review?
As far as the needs assessment?
Well, as far as any of the review of who is looking at the environmental impact and potential problems that the landfill will have?
We have invited, anybody can take a look at the permit application as well as the needs assessment. They're all public documents. We look at it internally. We have asked for a review from both Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, as well as Natural Resources, and have got comments back from both. And literally anybody wants to review, at the end I was going to make one final statement as far as the review goes and what we expect, but yeah, anybody can look at that environmental, look at it from an environmental perspective.
Lynn.
Okay, my question has three parts. Dust, water, and transportation. So the dust factor, obviously they have to control dust. Are they going to be required to have some sort of air quality permit through the Division of Air Quality that plays into the overall picture of the dust issues that we have in the Salt Lake Valley? How are they going to control the dust? Through water, I would presume. Where are they getting the water? And how are they going to transport the waste if it's either a class one and it's, you know, municipal jurisdictions within the state, or a class five bringing out-of-state waste in?
Right now they've got, as far as transportation, let me answer that one first. They've got the conditional use permit from Box Elder County to come down the east side of the peninsula, and there's certain provisions on that conditional use permit. As far as control of the dust, it will be water right now is the main place. There's other mechanisms for that. They do have a source of water up the east side of the peninsula where they're getting it right now
So it's actually on the peninsula? They're transporting it via, do they have a well? Do they have trucks?
They have access to a well that's being trucked down to the facility from this location.
Probably very expensive.
It could be, yeah. I don't know what their that cost is, but
yeah.
For us, they're required to control the dust.
Right.
As far as your other comment from the air quality, that I am not aware of any permit that's going to be required from air quality right now for dust. There's certain attainment areas, and whether that falls into one of those areas or not, I don't know.
Okay. And water, will they need, let's say they try to sink a well to get water in the vicinity so they don't have to truck it. Do they need to have a water right to do that?
Yes, they do.
So they would have to apply through the state engineer's office?
Yes.
In order to exercise
any well within the state that is going to be pulling water needs to go through the state water rights.
Right. So let's say the class five scenario becomes more realistic and they want to bring in waste from out of state. That comes on rail?
Right now, the only access they've got as far as transportation is by truck. There has been some discussions, and they've indicated to us they're looking at putting in a couple of spurs to bring in waste on rail.
And that would then take us into some exercising questions with Union Pacific and with state lands, and probably with the Army Corps of Engineers as far as navigational issues or public trust, you know, those kinds of things?
It potentially could, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Lynn. And last question.
You can tell when you go out to U.S. Magnesium on Raleigh Road where the big trucks turn off to go to the dump.
Mm-hmm.
There's ruts. And it's almost like automatic control until you get past there. So the roads issue is a big issue. I mean, for maybe not you guys up there, but in Tooele County, it costs money to make roads. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Are they going to have paved road to go out there or just rely on getting pulled out?
We're looking, one of the requirements that we've asked is they've got to look at transportation And that looks through the Utah Department of Transportation as well as Box Elder County with the roads that they oversee.
Okay, thank you. Last thought, Jeff.
Oh, just clarification on that. The company is required to post a construction bond for the road to go out there, and that's been posted with Box Elder County. And it will be paved from right out there where you get onto the Promontory Road out to the facility. And so, you know, that will minimize the dust going out there. And then they also have a maintenance agreement where they have to keep the road maintained to current standard, signed off by our road supervisor for the county. So the road right now, a lot of it's just gravel. And so it will actually be paved for the trucks to go out.
That's right, I do remember that in the conditional use permit.
Thank you, Jeff.
I've just got one other thing. I know there's been a lot of interest in this, and one of the things, we get a lot of comments all the time that are, for want of another term, I'm going to call it an emotional comment. We don't want to see the landfill here. That doesn't really provide a lot of assistance for us. If there's things that you see that need to be looked at from an engineering perspective or something specific concerning our rules, that's what we need to see. Because just hearing, I don't like the landfill, doesn't do a lot of good. Doesn't help us at all. And I know it frustrates everybody else at the same time. So it's, again, all the comments, the permit application, as well as all the documents associated with the permit, the landfill, are open for anybody's review.
Thank you, Al. Thank you for being here. We appreciate you taking your time to come and educate us and bring us up to speed. Yeah. So we will defer action on our letter until our member recommendation and action section. So we'll give you a few minutes to ponder what you've heard. Thank you all for being here. So the next item on the agenda is the prioritization of strategies for water for Great Salt Lake. Will you hand those out? Mm-hmm. Well, I've got some for the table.
You have some for the table,
though? I have some for the council members.
I do. What? Oh, I get some exercise too.
So while they're being handed out, in 2016, the council determined that Great Salt Lake lake level is a high priority consensus issue for council members. We had a lot of discussion about what role we could play that would be meaningful. We determined that one thing we could do would be to gather and publish potential strategies to help inform the debate and as a starting point for us to consider possible advocacy or solutions. We retained SWCA to gather and compile strategies. And they went through that process. As you know, they brought a draft report with 66 strategies to our September meeting. You determined you wanted to give people another bite of the apple, so they went out and they came back at our November meeting with 72 strategies to address water for Great Salt Lake. At that point in time, we determined we wanted to try to rank those strategies, and we came up with a green, yellow, red system. Green being you supported, red you opposed, and yellow you weren't sure for whatever reason, whether you didn't understand, need more information, whatever. And at our November meeting, we looked at the red, yellow, green. I'm sure you all remember the chart. And we took action. There were two consensus red items that we took action opposing. There were 18 consensus green items that we took action supporting. And then there were those in between, we identified a few where the issues were of interest and we wanted some further education before taking further action on those. And then we determined that we wanted to take another step at our November meeting and decided that we wanted to have individual council members actually rank these strategies. And what you have in front of you is the ranking of the draft strategies. So that these are the 18 strategies, the long title of the strategy, and then you have two columns. The column on the far right is a group priority, so it's basically an average, totaled up the vote, took an average, and then ranked them. So the column on the left is the average rank. So if you had 18 votes you could apply here, 1 through 18, and the average of the vote is shown in that first column. So for example, the average vote in favor of number one was ranking in the 11th preferred strategy. And that put it in a position 16 teamings and tied with another strategy. So interestingly, if you look at the top ranked strategy, it didn't have a vote higher than 6, I think. And the strategy average rank was 3.1, and that ranks to number one, and that was to allow irrigators or other water users to send unneeded water downstream without being penalized or at risk of losing water rights. Number two is the one just above it, strategy number 30, authorized split season leases. Number three was just below it, number 40, and it's very similar to number one, develop and implement measures to supply water to Great Salt Lake primarily by ensuring the water conserved upstream makes it to the Great Salt Lake. It's interesting, number four, which is strategy number 44, is meter all secondary water, creating a financial incentive to conserve. If you look at, and I won't go through each one unless you want to talk about each one individually. Number strategy rank number 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 9. So the top six ranked strategies, six out of the top nine ranked strategies, all involve a legal solution. For example, strategies number 39 and 30 and 40, which were ranked 1 and 3 respectively, would require changes to the basic water law principles of beneficial use and forfeiture. In other words, allow you to not use your water, not consume it, and send it downstream to the lake, and actually give it to the lake. So fundamental changes. Now the differences between 39 and 40, if you go in and read the detail, 40, which was ranked, or 39, which is ranked number one, is actually a broad provision of if you don't use your water, you don't forfeit it by letting it go downstream for whatever purpose. Number 40 is a little more narrow than that. It's if you've conserved your water and want to dedicate it to the Great Salt Lake, then you can go downstream. That's number 3. So there's a legal nuance there that if you were going to try to make the change to the law, number 1 would be a broad change. Number 3 would say, well, we're just changing it for purposes of water conserved for the Great Salt Lake and not for any other purpose. So by being a little more narrow, it may be a little more palatable to the politicians who have to make the change. But 6 of the top 9 would require legal changes. Another interesting thing is if you look at item rank number 4, 7, 8, and 10, or 4 of the top 10, they're all basically conservation oriented. So if you take our top 10 ranked strategies, the common thread here is that they require either changes in law or strong focus on conservation. That just, I think, leaps out from the page. And interestingly, those rankings were not necessarily totally consistent with the with the order of the red, yellow, green. So you've kind of further refined your thinking as you've looked at that. There are also, in my mind, a number of these that I think for us to translate approving the strategy and ranking it high and going from that to move to an actual strategy to get the changes made would require a couple of steps. One of them is some education. We need to fundamentally educate ourselves about some of these changes. And then secondly, we need to come up with a strategy and a plan to go forward to secure those changes. And that really would be the recommendation I would make for our next step. It was clear that these 18 consensus items were consensus items of support, because none of them were just really trashed in terms of this ranking. So there were high and low marks for virtually every one of the strategies on here, meaning the votes from 1 to 18. If you look at number 18, eliminate non-native free out of fights and other high water use plans from natural and artificial channels, I'd say, you know, maybe we don't pursue that. And then the next two lowest would be 16T, which is number 11, and the other 16T, which is number 1. And number 1 is determined consumptive coefficients, such as evaporation transpiration for various water applications. My understanding is the state water engineer has already done some of that, a great deal of that, perhaps. And number 11, develop a public education campaign that includes benefits of conservation, et cetera. That was really low ranked. So, frankly, my recommendation would be those three would maybe put on the side burner here. But the other 15 we ought to seriously move forward with and adopt a ranking and then set out over the next number of meetings to educate ourselves about these key strategies and to develop a plan to actually get them implemented with an eye on the 2019 legislative session. It's really too late to do anything this session, and I've had conversations with a few people who suggested to me subtly that the 2019 session might be a session where they're already thinking about looking at some water-related issues. That's not to say that these suggestions, changing the basic fundamental provisions of our water law, is an easy task. But your votes were quite compelling. I mean, number 1 and number 3 were basically the same thing, changed the water laws. Number 2, authorized split season leases. Other groups are talking about that. There's some conversation as to whether a change needs to be made, although currently the state engineer, I think his position is that it would require a change in law. Our fourth ranked item, meter all secondary water, thereby creating a financial incentive to conserve. water districts can do that voluntarily. The question is, do you want to mandate that they do it? And before taking that step, I'd recommend we invite an expert to come and give a presentation about the costs, the benefits, et cetera. There was a nice article in the recently published Friends of Great Salt Lake quarterly newsletter by Darren Hess, is that right, from Weber Basin Water, exactly on that issue, and I'm sure he'd be willing to come and educate us. So that's my kind of summary of what we've done and where we're at and what I think we should do. I think it's time to move from deciding what we like to deciding how to get something done. And I see the education component, and kind of the strategy component, and then refining. I mean, we got to pick and choose between 39 and 40, right? We want to make a major change to water law for all potential uses or just for conservation water conserved for the Great Salt Lake. That might be an easier step and certainly more within the purview of our group if someone else wants to take a broader view. Okay, council members, questions, comments?
Well, you know, some of these that are, they parallel some that were done by the Water Task Force.
Right.
And so, I think it would be behoove to look and see what actually happens this legislative session. I just looked up on their, there's a in-process bill, one of the representatives for secondary water and metering requirements. And so it may take care of itself before we even have to do anything.
We could endorse it.
Yes, we could. And because we have a prioritization, which I would certainly recommend that we adopt, then we can go up and say we endorse that as part of one of the priorities of getting water to the Great Salt Lake. But there are other ones that may be able to come through this session yet.
Thanks. Other comments or questions? Dan?
I think this session they're going to put in to forestry, fire, and state lands budget just ongoing for the frack monies. So we don't have to go up and beg for money.
Right. So
that takes that off the list.
Nice job, man. Mm-hmm. Great. Any other comments? How about from non-council members? Any comments, questions? Why? I like that. Marcel.
There are, as you mentioned, a number of dialogues going on about updating and modernizing some provisions of Utah water law. As those move forward, I guess I'm just wondering, as we get more clear on what those might look like, if the council can consider potentially supporting some of those. But that's obviously later down the road, but it might fit in with these priorities.
Marcel, we're open to any concepts or ideas coming to us. I think we need to stay true to our own process, but that doesn't exclude anything else. But we have, it's been nobody's going to stand up and say, I didn't have an opportunity to have a voice in what we're doing here. And we went through two public solicitation processes. Every single one of these strategies came from the public. And we vetted it through multiple meetings now. It's our third meeting looking at the results. And each meeting we've taken steps on approving, adopting, refining, ranking, prioritizing, and narrowing. So I think we're at the point where we shouldn't be ashamed to stand behind what we've done and move forward. And if there are others, I think we'd welcome.
It wasn't that there were necessarily others, it's just that there were some consistent things on your list that are, as you said, legal items that right. are moving forward, where the council can support those, and even now saying,
well, clearly the council strongly supports taking a relook at certain laws that affect the water. Other comments from the public? Chris?
Just quick thank you to you, Don Marcus, and Laura, and others who really did all the lifting to get us to this point. So, just thanks.
It's all Don.
Okay, so my recommendation was that we adopt the ranking and that we move forward with a plan to further educate ourselves when needed and further refine the written proposals and prepare a strategy for seeking their adoption.
So moved.
Second.
There's been a motion and a second. Is there any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed nay? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. I will go out and contact those who have a lead or others just to get their assessment as well. Okay, motion to approve and we'll move forward. And you'll see in the next couple of meetings some people added to our agenda to help educate us on these issues. Okay, next on the agenda, public comments. Let me ask how many people here are interested in making a public comment. That's great, just picked up 10 minutes. Let's go back to Pastor
Norway. We have them for the council. Or does everyone need one?
I think you need one to everyone. It says draft. It's not a final. So we're on other member recommendations and actions. Let's go back to the landfill. At the November meeting, he unanimously adopted a motion to ask us to prepare for submission a letter raising general issues and concerns that you would hope that the landfill would address and cover. That draft was sent out to council members, and I've heard back from several of you, mostly with approvals, a couple of comments. I think the draft letter is true to what the intent was of this group at the meeting in November. Briefly, the first introduction paragraph identifies where our purpose is, just to identify questions, issues, and concerns that we'd like to have addressed in the process. Not taking a position in favor or against the landfill. The second section of paragraph outlines that one of the statutory duties of our group is, in fact, to advise the Department of Environmental Quality on the Sustainable Use, Protection, and Development of Great Salt Lake, and that our comments will be submitted pursuant to that statutory authority. Page 2, we didn't identify the the value of the Great Salt Lake with a paragraph on the economic study, the economic value, and a paragraph on the ecological value. Obviously, you can go pages and pages and pages outlining those values, but this is a brief summary just to note why this is so such importance to us in the state of Utah. And then the middle of page two starts a series of, is that nine bullets of questions, issues, etc. The first one dealing with the fugitive dust debris and materials from the site itself. The second one dealing with dust debris and materials from transportation to the site, the issue that Tom mentioned. Third is the sufficiency of studies to determine the scope of migration of leachate, of stored waste. Four, the adequacy of plans and infrastructure to collect leachate from the waste. The next one, the potential for containment failure. I should mention that I did get a couple of comments and changes. I intended to address these. I got them late last night, so I wasn't able to get them incorporated into what we handed out. But under the first three bullets, the changes, let me summarize simply, are just to change the word hazard, to redefine the term materials rather than hazardous. It's hazardous for materials not deemed hazardous but have sufficient risks posed to human health and the environment. And both those first two bullets are changed in that regard. And then the next couple are changed to add the a little clarification about leachate. And then the second one on page three, the potential for containment failure, adds a few words about liner degradation over time. If you go down to page three, the first one's adequacy of studies to secure protection of avian resources and their critical food chain. The next one, sufficiency of design to address fractured bedrock beneath the site. The next one, adequacy of project design to address the risk of large volumes of materials. This talks about the significant waste stream from outside. And changes the word coal ash to coal, the comments to coal combustion residuals, and uses that terminology. And then it adds a new bullet. How will the permittees address the coal combustion residuals, federal rule for record keeping and reporting requirements, as well as requirements for each facility to establish and post specific information to a publicly accessible website? So that's just, again, another question that we'd like them to answer. The comment letter ends with a couple of paragraphs just iterating the comment that Lena was making and a couple of others of you in regards to the location of the lake, how close it is in terms of distance and elevation to the lake itself. And then says thank you and if you can provide more information. So it would be our intent to approve this letter, this meeting, and go back and make the revisions and get it in Alan's hand this week, within a day.
Will we approve the letter and authorize it to be sent?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion or debate? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Thanks to all of you who, council members who took a look at that and commented back to me. I really appreciate that. It's really helpful. Okay, any other items to talk about on our for action issues? Any new issues? Any suggestions aside from the fact that we will fill our agendas for the next few meetings with some people to educate on our key priorities? Any other topics you'd like to have considered for future meetings?
Lynn's
going. Oh, Lynn. You got to sit down behind me.
I know.
You better make a noise.
Okay, so perhaps some other potential land use issues that will have direct impacts on the system. Among them would be the proposed inland port. Adjacent to the northwest quadrant of the lake in Salt Lake City. And perhaps the proposed expansion of the Salt Lake International Airport to include an additional runway further west.
Taking it to this person, huh?
Huh?
Taking it to this person. Okay, Lynn, let us gather more information and we'll cut it for the group in the future. Any other suggestions? Carlton.
Hi, sorry.
Carlton, thanks for being here. Before we close, we unanimously adopted the rankings and approved the letter. I'll need you to be able to record your vote, okay?
Sure.
So don't be on the spot right here.
Just
say aye. Aye. Okay, great. Any other business? Our next meeting is March 14th. I assume we'll be here at the same time, 10 o'clock. And we have meetings on the 16th of May, 11th of July, 12th of September, 14th of November. And there's an error at the bottom of the agenda about what the next meeting is. Sorry about that. It is March 14th. Great. Again, thanks to Davis County. Alan, thank you for being here and presenting. We appreciate that. Jeff, thank you for being here and presenting. Would you make sure everyone who's in attendance, before you leave, if you have not done so, that you put your name on our attendance roll? We haven't done as good a job as we should have in the past of making sure we're recording everyone who is here, and that's an important thing. And so if you make sure your name's on that list before you go. There's no downside to being on the list.
Only benefits, yeah.
Only benefits.
There's a presentation, but other than that.
When the Great Salt Lake Lotto is finished, you might get a share of the winnings. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you, Jeff. Is there a second?
Okay.
Thank you, Randy. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the next one. Really, really. I love that time.